Hi there. This is Michelle McGrath, Executive Director of the United States Association of Cider Makers, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 53. Hello, and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Wincoller, and I am your Cider MC on this weekly podcast, where we speak to cider makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, we are chatting with Michelle McGrath, the new executive director for the United States Association of Cider Makers. There'll be more on that chat in a moment. This is a very exciting week because this coming weekend will be the 22nd annual Cider Days that is held each year on the first weekend of November in Massachusetts, specifically Franklin County. So they have now started calling it Franklin County Cider Days, but I just know it as Cider Days. And I'm going to have some great insider tips and a cider meetup location all at the end of this chat with Michelle. And she's going to be at Cider Days too, by the way, although that is a little bit of a spoiler alert with this chat, so hang on to your hats. In the meantime, let's welcome the new folks who just liked the Cider Chat Facebook page. So welcome to Noel and Philip. Philip is from Vermont Cider Company, which is also known as Woodchuck Cider. If you haven't had Woodchuck in a while, you should really try it. They're making some great stuff. They have some nice festivals, and they're in Vermont. And there's really cool people who work at Woodchuck. Speaking as someone who used to live in Vermont, I could say good people, good times all throughout Vermont. And we also have Marin, who is from the Netherlands. Hello, Marin. Who are it? Met u? Met me? Met me? How did who? That was Dutch for... How you doing, Marin? Me? I'm doing pretty well. Yeah, practicing my Dutch. And we have Nick, who I believe is from New York, and he is a cider maker. I'm not sure where he's making cider right now, and maybe he'll let us know in a bit. And then there is April, who is from Western Massachusetts, and she leads the cider making workshop. It'll be held this Sunday at Cider Days. It's going to be at New Salem Preserves and Orchards. That's in New Salem, Massachusetts. And that workshop, let me see, I have it right here. It is called Home Hard Cider Makers Workshop, Make and Taste with April Woodard. It's from 1 to 2:30. That's a free event. And April actually took over the cider making slot right there at New Salem that I used to do for 16 years. So she's going to be rocking and rolling there. It is an done outside. There's a little fire, absolutely beautiful view. There's often hot food to be had, some crafters. You could walk in their spectacular orchard. That Carol B. Hillman, she and Bob Coles, which this Cider Days is dedicated towards, they brought back that orchard. So that's just a must visit. Every year on Cider Days, I make it over there. And I hope you could go to April's event. And then we have Tom Oliver. He is from the UK, and you might know him from Oliver's Cider and Perry. And that guy, he is cranking out amazing cider and perry. He's a real lover of the pear scene, does some cool stuff. I absolutely adore Tom. I had him on the podcast. It's episode 29. And wouldn't you know it, just a couple days ago when I was getting up and checking my emails, in came a little email saying that Oliver's Cider and Perry had just made a donation to Cider Chat to help keep this chat thriving. So thank you very much, Mr. Oliver, for being part of the Cider Going Up campaign. That really made my day. And you too, if you're a commercial cider maker, you can join the Cider Going Up campaign or make a donation to help keep chats like this with Michelle McGrath, with Tom Oliver, and so many more folks from around the world in the heart of cider and perry, this amazing libation, bringing it out in this audio form, and so much more. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Big tip of the glass to Mr. Tom Oliver. The Cider Chat Facebook page is open and non-exclusive, so please join today and grab a glass and join the chat. While I'm still thinking about the UK, I don't want to forget that I just wrote a book review for the beer newspaper that I write for. That's Yankee Brew News. It covers the New England area for the craft beer scene. And I was asked to write a book review on cider. And I picked Ellen Stone's book called Dorset Cider with an Excursion to the New Forest. Now, this was printed in 2014, and it was self-published. And I'm going to be putting the book review on the resource page on the ciderchat.com website. And that resource page has a whole list of books that I've been reading. But I'm going to give you the short piece. And this is a pretty short review anyways, so I think you'll be able to get it. The book is worthwhile. That's it. That's a short piece. Get it. If you're a cider geek and you're saying, oh, you know, what do you want to get me for the holidays? Request this book. It's awesome. Even if you never go to the UK, it's going to fill you in with so much background on a region that has probably not been gotten all the cider attention that it probably could get at this point. But there's a lot of history there. And I didn't know it, and I've totally enjoyed it. It's broken down into three different parts. Part one provides an introduction to Dorset, with chapters on the place of Dorset in cider history. Part two provides over 21 individual interviews with Dorset makers and how to purchase their cider, along with a list of local pubs, attractions, and events. And the last section is called an Excursion into the New Forest. Now, New Forest is like the New Forest National Park, and there's a cidery there called New Forest. So it talks about that cidery and highlights it. Really wonderful book. Awesome cover photo. That is just alone something that you like to have on your desk. I know I do. And it's just chock full of information. So there'll be a link at the show notes page for this episode number 53. You'll be able to check it out there and also at the ciderchat.com resource page. Ask for it. Put it on your to-do list. Give it to the cider geeks in your life whom you love. And support somebody who writes about cider and history and gets it out there into the world. Tip of the glass to Ellen Stone, the author of Dorset Cider. Hooey, there's just so much in this week's chat. It keeps on going on, and I don't want to delay another week reading to you this amazing iTunes review for Cider Chat, because somebody took a lot of time here to do it, and I think that's worth mentioning. And not only that, it's a really nice thing to hear. So this is a 5-star review from Informative and Easy to Use, and it's titled, Must Have for Anyone Who Loves Libations, Apples and Pears, or Meeting Good People. This person writes, passionate, interesting, funny. The first three words that come to my mind as I sat to write this review. My family are aspiring cider makers and found Cider Chat during a desperate search for any and all information about cider, cider making, and fruit growing. Boy, does Rhea deliver. Her guests are the real deal, pioneers in the field, knowledgeable, and good human beings. Hell yeah, they are. Ditto to that. Thank you so much. Makes us eager to join their ranks. Every episode we've listened to has been chock full of great information, great stories, and great people. Rhea's own knowledge and experience making cider for multiple decades, gulp, I put that gulp in there, contributes to her questions being thoughtful and provoking. Great mix of topics from drinking to making to growing to juicing to meeting up. It's all there in one place, in Ciderville. If you're at all interested in cider making, fruit growing, or artisans and their craft, grab a glass and join the chat. You'll stay for a while and be glad you did. Man, oh man, oh man, oh, that is absolutely lovely. Thank you so much for taking the time to leave that review and rating on iTunes. You know, every time a person does that in Ciderville, it pushes the podcast up a little bit and puts it in that lineup where folks like yourself, are cruising around saying, how can I find out about cider making? What do I know about the United States Association of Cider Makers, like the chat we're going to have with Michelle today? Or how do I ID apples, like with John Bunker? Or what's happened in Japan or Australia or Chile or Canada or the United States? And coming up in Asturias and so many more countries. So right on. Thank you for doing that, taking the time and leaving a review and rating. And I hope this inspires you, Ciderville, if you haven't yet done that, to do that today wherever you find this podcast. Now I think it's time that we go to our chat with Michelle McGrath. Michelle came on board with the United States Association of Cider Makers just a couple of months ago. When I recorded this chat, I believe it was in October, and she had only taken the position 3 months earlier. So you go backwards, September, August, and July. And since then, she's hit the ground running. We're going to be talking about what the goals and the mission for the United States Association are, where they're going, and the makeup of the members. In addition, we'll be talking about the February event that is known as a CiderCon. This is a trade event that'll be taking place this year in Chicago. And we're also going to talk about the new campaign called Pick Cider. That's all about getting folks to go out and say, heck, it's Thanksgiving. What do I want for my dinner table? Well, I want to get some ciders. I want to kind of change that little hashtag to pick cider to pick ciders. But I'll talk more about that in a wee bit with Michelle and later. In the meantime, let's you and I grab a glass and join this chat with Michelle McGrath, the Executive Director of the United States Association of Cider Makers. Michelle, welcome to Cider Chat. Super stoked to be getting this opportunity to speak with you. I know it's a busy season coming into the fall harvest. I imagine even for an executive director like yourself, who might not be making cider commercially, I know you're in touch with all the cider makers throughout the U.S. Before we get into the association, why don't we just chat a little bit about Michelle and who you are and your connection to cider?
I'd be happy to, Rhea, and thank you so much for having me on Cider Chat. I've been listening to your podcast nonstop ever since I even applied for the position, and it's really helped me to get acquainted with the community, so I'm really excited to be here. My cider background probably starts as a young kid when I got connected with agriculture. You know, I'm not like many of our cider makers who were making hooch in their teens, but I was present at the farmer's market with my parents who were selling the fruit that they grew in a small orchard, a hobby orchard, and that blossomed into a passion for agriculture in general. And when I was getting my PhD in biology, I took a summer off, just I needed a break, and sold blue cheese by Rogue Creamery at Portland area farmers markets for a summer. And in that process, I was exposed to cider because Wandering Angus also sold cider at the same farmers markets where I was selling cheese. And I would come home every day with samples of really good cheese and really good cider. And it was the perfect combination to spark a passion in drinking cider. And I was just in the right place at the right time. And that job selling cheese led to a role working for a small agricultural nonprofit in beautiful Hood River, Oregon, called Gorge Grown Food Network. And I ended up being the executive director there, and I was working very closely with all sorts of farmers, with ranchers, with vegetable growers, with orchardists, and with what we call value-added producers, and that included cider makers. And this was in 2012 when cider was really starting to take off. And so I brought together the cider makers and the orchardists and some cider experts to start talking about how they could put Hood River cider scene on the map and how they could develop that product for the region. And then I ended up leaving Hood River, but I stayed in touch with those cider makers, and some of them have become very good friends. And now they have their own cider association called the Gorge Cider Society, and they even have a route, a cider route. And since then, I've just been drinking cider as a passion. And I almost went to CiderCon last year just as an enthusiast. I really wish I had, but I was very close because it was in Portland, Oregon. And that's sort of my cider background. You know, it's really more about the people than it is about the product. But I think that's one of the reasons I really enjoy leading an association is because I get to interact with all the members and the cider makers and the cider growers.
So you are based in Oregon then, and this position is probably kind of catapulting you all over the U.S. Is there a bit of traveling now that you're doing as executive director of the association?
Yes, traveling is a lovely perk of the position. I have only gone to Eastern Washington so far and Chicago for board meetings, but I have a trip to Franklin County Cider Days on the docket. I think I'm going to go to Glint Cap in the spring, and I'm really hoping to get out to New York and Sonoma and some of the other, and Michigan and some of the other cider areas next year.
I'm so excited. So I'll get to meet you in person at Cider Days coming up this November 4th, 5th, and 6th.
Yes, we will get to meet. The USACM is really excited to be a sponsor this year of Franklin County Cider Days. So I will be there and I'm really looking forward to it.
Great. You know, I do have some special tips, just one special episode just on making your way and then another episode on the schedule of events. So there'll be other tips coming along. If you haven't been out to this part of Ciderville, it's an amazing region. So really looking forward to meeting you then.
Yes, actually, I've already listened to those episodes and they were very helpful in planning my trip. So thank you.
My pleasure. Let's talk about the association and some of the makings of it. In terms of specifically for folks who are still kind of wrapping their head around it, certainly listeners are part of the association, but there's a lot of up and coming, what I would call like hobbyist cider makers who are thinking, I want to go commercial. Why don't we talk about the association and start a little bit with the mission, and then if you can, roll into like the membership profile. What kind of members do you serve?
Great question. So the association is fairly new. We were founded, the formation began in 2012, but we were founded in 2013. And we've seen over 1,000% growth in our membership numbers since that. So we're growing tremendously fast. And we have a few core mandates that were established at the beginning and remain true today. They sort of overlap and support each other. But if you separate them out, you know, one of our core mandates, obviously, is to advance cider in the market. Cider is a relatively small piece of what I call the alcohol pie. And we want to grow that piece for all of our members. And then we want to create opportunities for peer learning, which right now we primarily do with CiderCon. And we are exploring other ways to allow cider makers and cider apple growers to interact with each other and learn from each other's expertise. And then a big one is that we're promoting a cider-friendly regulatory environment at the federal level and advocating for legislation that supports cider makers. And then right there in our mission statement, it does mention cider apple growing. So we are committed to supporting the cider apple growers out there that are pioneering this work for the United States. And we are gathering and sharing information about the cider industry for our members. So those are our core mandates that make up who we are. And then, you know, I mentioned earlier, it's all about the people, and that's the same with USACM. So we have over 1,300 members to date, and 95% of our cidery members are making less than 500,000 gallons a year. So we are primarily comprised of small cider makers, and we have memberships for the home cider makers and the enthusiasts, and we have memberships for those people that are just getting started out with their cidery and planning. And then it tiers up from 5,000 gallons to 25,000 gallons to 100,000 gallons and to 500,000 gallons. And then we also have memberships for our allied trade members that are supporting the industry through their products.
Now, I did notice that, and just to kind of clarify what you mean by it tiers up. So there's a different cost associated if you are a maker who is that hobbyist level, and then it kind of tiers up in the price of membership. Is that correct?
Yes, there is a tier in the price of membership, and you can find all of that on our website at ciderassociation.org/join. So for the cidery in planning level, it's $175, and it goes up from there.
Mm-hmm. And this is kind of a big scope of what you're providing here as services, and you're new to this position. I think you came on in the spring. It's yourself, and then,
Rhea, I came on less than 3 months ago. I just want to make that clear. I haven't even reached my 2.5 month mark. So you're tenacious, and I'm very excited to be on the show.
Well, you know that there's been a big calling to have you on the show from listeners saying, we want to hear from Michelle. And I certainly wanted to kind of step back and let you have a little bit of breathing time. So I know that it's you've hit the ground running, no doubt. And so with that, I really think it's important, you know, both for myself, I want to say, but I think any listeners who are part of the association or thinking of joining, that to remember that this is a young founded group that is really working towards promoting cider and bringing the industry along. So with that said, Michelle, you got a lot on your plate. You have board members. You're doing all these job specs that is not just doing the work of what one regular executive director would do, but you're doing so much more. What kind of areas are you channeling? What does the day in the life of the executive director for the association look like? Michelle, what do you do on a daily basis?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I've been really committed to getting to know our stakeholders for the first 2 months. I felt like that was really critical. I needed to hear from USACN members about what were the challenges that they were facing, what were the successes that they had, what were their needs from the association. So I spend a lot of my time on the phone talking about the cider industry. And I welcome anyone to call me at any time. My phone number is 503-593-1716. And I really do want to hear from you. But beyond that, there's a lot of organizing. We have contractors that I have to engage with. And this time of year is highly dominated by planning CiderCon. CiderCon registration just went live. It was one of my first major benchmarks in my role. I was really excited to reach it. And people are beginning to register and planning is in full swing. It's been in full swing for the last 2 months. So that's been a big piece of it. And then I'm also gearing up to plan our strategic planning session this fall, which we will be doing a 3-year strategic plan. And that is in requiring collecting feedback from my board members and allowing them to dream big and think about their vision. And I invite members to also share their vision for the association with me as we prepare for that process. And as you know, I'm also doing marketing and social media, so there's that as well. It's the social media is not really a priority right now, but it is something that I'm really proud to have doubled the audience of both of our social, all three of our social media channels in just 2 months. So that's exciting. And I also participate in all of our committee meetings. You know, I'm saying this like all the work that I do, but all of this happens in a day. Like just today, I've done all these things. We have a legislative committee, a research committee, a marketing committee, a finance committee, an executive committee, you know, it goes on and on. So there is, yeah, you're absolutely right. There is a lot of work, but I am the type of person that is happiest wearing many, many hats. And that is one of the reasons I was so excited to take this role.
Mm-hmm. You said that you speak a lot to this, your groups of cider makers. And I'm wondering if there's a central theme that's coming out in those conversations that's kind of stood out in this 3-month period that kind of keeps on popping out as a regular piece for each cider maker. And I'm kind of wondering if that's on marketing, or is it production, or getting to CiderCon? What do you see as a common thread there, or is there one?
Everybody's story is pretty unique. I actually haven't found a common thread yet. There has been a lot of interest in discussing the Cider Certification Program, which we will be reopening online for Level 1 this January. So that's another thing that I've been working on. And that program, as you may or may not know, is geared towards educating what I call the front line of cider sales. So we are really excited to be reopening that program. We already have about 200 certified professionals, and we're hoping to have many more by the time CiderCon rolls around. And there's been a lot of interest in discussing the strategic implementation of that program beyond Level 1. I think it's something, I think the lack of consumer understanding and awareness of cider is actually the common thread. Now that I think about it, cider drinkers or whether they're new or perhaps even, you know, they've been drinking cider for a couple years, are relatively confused when they go out to the marketplace. It's challenging for them to understand if the cider they're about to open is going to be sweet or off dry or dry. And they are perhaps frustrated by the fact that they don't know what they're getting by opening up a bottle. So that's something that I've heard from a lot of cider makers, is that we really need to educate the consumer. And so the CCP program and the Pick Cider marketing program that we're launching right now are both aimed at helping expand people's awareness on cider.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So getting back to that program, I do know about it because I got my first Level 1 cider certification when I was at CiderCon in Portland last year. And it sounds like that
program. Woohoo!
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that was like a one-day presentation, and then there was an online test. So that's going to be relaunched again. Is the Level 2 going to be offered at CiderCon in Chicago? Do you have more information that you could share?
Yeah, so CCP is going to be a strictly online program moving forward. We have interest from all over the world in taking this course, and or taking the test, rather. And so we're going to move to more of a test-based model. We're putting together a study guide that will allow people to self-study and prepare for the exam, and then they will take the exam to earn their certification. And we plan to reach out to distributors and to other key, again, that front line, key stakeholders in that front line of cider sales. And hopefully they'll go so far as requiring their employees to have this certification, so that when they are talking about cider with the confused consumer, they can educate them. And Level 2, we're definitely committed, but we are going to be discussing the exact plan for Level 2 and beyond in our strategic planning sessions that will be happening in a couple weeks.
Right. And just to bring Ciderville listeners up to task on this, so there were three levels that were initially proposed, and I suppose that could change at any point as you're developing this program. But Level 1 was the one day. That's going to be online now. And then Level 2, it from what you just said, and I just want to make sure I'm correct in hearing you, that that's still in planning on how to set up Level 2. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. And that there still might be a Level 3 in addition?
Yep.
Okay.
I anticipate we will go up to 3 or 4 levels.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So I know that listeners can go to the website again, and there is a little tab there for certification if they want to find out more about that. Now, let's get back to just kind of talking about the workings of the association before we go right into CiderCon, and I really want to go there. But let's talk about just looking forward for 2017. Is there any specific task or role? You gave the overall mission, but a big part of last year was the passage of the CIDR Act, which will really come into effect for 2017. What are you seeing there? Is 2017 kind of geared towards answering the questions of how the CIDR Act impacts producers or cider makers, I should say? Is there any specifics that you might be able to share with us on a actual goal for 2017 overall that encapsulates the mission?
That the implementation of the CIDR Act beginning January 1st is huge. And I just want to refresh your listeners about what that is going to change. It's going to increase the allowable carbonation in cider. It's going to increase the allowable alcohol content from 7 to 8.5% ABV. And it's going to allow Perry to fall under the definition of legal cider. So these are all some pretty big changes for the cider industry, and we're really excited to have TTB at CiderCon again this year to explain how those changes are going to affect those members. And they're a fantastic resource. I highly recommend connecting with them. Susan at TTB actually said I could provide her information to anybody that wanted it. So all you have to do is contact me and I'll give it to you. But they'll be at CiderCon talking about the implementation. But there's another little piece in the CIDR Act that not a lot of people know about, and I actually just learned about it recently, and it's really exciting, is that they're changing the bond requirement for small cider producers. So, it might actually be for small alcohol producers, but it will affect cider producers. And the bond requirement is sort of like a down payment when you rent a house. It's a down payment to the federal government on your taxes. And so if you owe less than $50,000 a year in taxes, they are actually going to stop requiring a bond from you, and they're going to give you your bond back. Mm. You have to request it back and prove that you are a small producer. But that is going to be a huge boon for our small members, and that's something that I'm really excited about. So that was included in the CIDR Act, which TTB calls the PATH Act, just so people are aware. They're similar things. Mm-hmm. And then there's also this wonderful act that Ron Wyden has championed called the Craft Beverage Modernization Act. And this is one of the first times that all the alcohol industries have worked together to support each other rather than working against each other, fighting over those pieces of the alcohol pie. They're all working together. And it's still yet to be passed, but in the Craft Beverage Modernization Act, there is a component that benefits small wineries, which according to the federal government, cider is wine. And so it will definitely benefit fruit cider producers and potentially cider producers. But it greatly expands the small producer tax credit. Right now, the small producer tax credit is only available to people producing 150,000 gallons or less. This will expand it up to 750,000. So it's a huge expansion and a wonderful benefit for the small producers. So if you are talking to your Congress, the thing you want to support is the expansion of tax credits for wineries and particularly the small producer tax credit. So that's what's on the docket for 2017 so far. We've gotten a heads up that there may be some opportunities to advocate for cider in some rulemaking through the TTB, but until we know more about that, I'm not really prepared to talk about that yet. But there's other possibilities on the table. I'll mm-hmm. just say that.
Great.
And then the research grants will be submitted again in December. In December, we'll be releasing the RFP. So That's a lot. Mm-hmm. Legislation and the research grants and CCP and CiderCon. And I'll know more about our general theme in 2017. But I think CCP will be a big part of that. So.
Great. Now, I just want to clarify something for folks because we're throwing around a little bit of jargon here or shortening things.
Yes, I apologize. I'm being wonky.
That's okay. That's okay. The TTB stands for the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau. And those are the folks who really regulate alcohol and have been regulating the carbonation for cider and all that. So they're a key component. And that's a group that you refer to who will be at CiderCon. And then I just want to get back to the Craft Beverage Modernization Act. Is that coming up for vote? Is that what you're saying there to call your representatives for that? Or is that going to come up for vote in 2017?
You know, so I was talking to our legislative chair about this recently, and we're not really clear on the timeline, but we will alert our members and our followers on social media when it is time to act. But I know a lot of our cider makers, because they are key to their local economy, already have established relationships with their representatives. So if it's the sort of thing where you already have a relationship with your representative, ask them to support the Craft Beverage Modernization Act, even if it's just in solidarity with our other friends that are serving pieces of the alcohol pie.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, let's talk about CiderCon itself. That's going to be taking place in Chicago. And if you could give us the dates and then also give us a little bit of, I know the schedule's online, but last year there was the UK makers like Bill Bradshaw and Neil Worley, and about three or four folks attended. And this year it looks like there's going to be a French contingent. Can you say more about that?
CiderCon is happening in Chicago, February 8th, 9th, and 10th. And then don't forget, Ciderville people, that on February 11th is Chicago Cider Summit. So when you are planning your trip, be sure to save space for both of those activities. And you're correct. This year we have some really exciting guests from France joining us. We will have a session on French keeving, which is a cider technique. We will have a French perry tasting. There will be a tasting of Calvados. And then in our grand tasting at the very end, where we do our commencement toast, all the French cider makers will be there, and they'll be serving special products for everybody to try. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited to learn about keeving. I don't know a whole lot about it, and I'm excited. And I think it's going to be great. I can't pronounce any of their names. I need to take a French class for this new job, so I'm not even going to try. But
I agree with Michelle. Sometimes pronunciation can be a bit difficult. Since I have spoken with her, she has sent to me the list of the workshops and the times, though you should look at them on the show notes for episode 53, which is this chat. Do know that those times can change. But there is a French perry tasting with Daphrès Poiret and Christian Duren Poiret. There is a keeving on Thursday, February 9th with Le Brun Brut Cidre de Bretonnage and a couple other ciders. And then there's a Calvados with Gillian Drouin, and he'll be presenting his own and selecting a range of Calvados and Palmu from his region. And then, of course, the Grand Cider Tasting on Friday, February 10th at 5:15. All of the three French presenters will be on the panel. This is something you will not want to miss.
They will be there, and it will be great.
Well, I'm thinking if they're going to be speaking on Calvados, that would be Normandy, because Calvados only comes from Normandy. There is, just for listeners, there is a new museum called the Musée de Poiret that is in Normandy that I just visited on my trip there just about 2 weeks or so ago. And actually this week I spoke to the president of the Interprofession de Syndicats, which is their association, much like what you're doing, Michelle. And that was Didier Bedu, and he is that chat is online now as you're listening to this chat with Michelle. The scene over there for the
French, can you repeat that name?
Sure, it's Didier, and that's spelled D-I-D-I-E-R, Bedu, and that's V-E-D-U. And I think that chat is really informative for U.S. makers in particular, because we're talking about the use of terminology, and that just as we know that Champagne is a trade name for that region, that's also true for Pamu and also Calvados, which are represented by the European Union, and it's an appellation. So any U.S. makers who are thinking, no, I want to make something, I want to distill a spirit, you got to really watch out for the terminology of Calvados that is protected, and also the use of the word Pamu is a protected word too, which is a blending of Calvados with cider. So it's very informative being able to speak to, at least in my chair, being able to speak to the different representatives of associations like the United States Association of Cider Makers and what they call in France, the short term is EDAC. So there's a lot going on there. That sounds like a wonderful lineup. And having just been to France, I know that attendees, boy, that's like a double Benny. You get to have all these amazing U.S. cider makers, and then to have the French cider makers there is going to be really, really knocking the ball out of the park, as they say.
I just also wanted to plug that the beloved Charles McGonigal will be there again doing the sensory analysis. And I know people get really excited about that. And if you haven't participated in one of his sensory analyses before, I think you'll really enjoy it. It's quite a treat.
Now, you mentioned that the dates were the 8th, 9th, and 10th. And having attended CiderCon last year, you know, I was kind of scratching my head. When do I show up? Because I didn't know, like, well, when do the events actually start happening? And, you know, people now are making their plane reservations and trying to get all squared away. And you should be, because things fill up. Are there going to be tours that go out? Is there a reason, like a pre-CiderCon event that is happening? Or is that something that's too early to be asking you? Because I know that sometimes people actually do want to show up a little bit earlier to get out on some of those tours. Would you be able to speak on that at all?
CiderCon itself starts February 8th. And in the morning, we have two in-depth sessions that you may or may not want to participate. One is an in-depth session of navigating TTB regulations. If you're new or you're planning your cidery and you're confused about labeling requirements and tax requirements, this is a session you're going to want to participate in. It is offered several times throughout CiderCon, so if you can't make it the morning of the 8th, don't fret. If you're an apple grower, we will be offering our advanced apple orchardist workshop all day on Wednesday. So there are those two workshops in the morning. But then one of the parts of CiderCon that I'm really looking forward to the most, the Cider Share, where people are bringing products with them to the hotel, opening up a bottle, and people are tasting each other's products and the welcoming reception. That's happening in the afternoon of Wednesday the 8th. So you really want to be in the hotel at the Hilton by 3 o'clock on Wednesday the 8th at the latest. We alternate CiderCon every year between tours and awards. So this is an award year. Chicago's not a great place to tour in February. We are going to be giving away CiderCon awards again this year. But we are talking about having some outside CiderCon events. There are some wonderful volunteers that are Chicago-based that are really excited about this. And I don't have any more details for you than that yet. But if you haven't had the opportunity to experience the culinary heaven that is Chicago, I recommend you plan a full day just for eating your way through the city. And hopefully we'll be able to point you to restaurants that are supporting cider that week because we'll all be in town, and then you can have a really delicious cider with your meal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's the cider bar, the Northman, which is in Chicago. And the cider share that you talked about on Wednesday, that will be taking place on site at the Hilton. Last year in Portland, it took place at, I'm going to call it Omni, but it's not that. It was like the, you probably know what it is in Portland.
It's Omzi.
Yes, thank you. And that was like an amazing museum that they opened up, and it was just filled with all the cider folks. But this year it'll be taking place right at the Hilton.
Yes, everything takes place in the Hilton this year.
Okay, wonderful. Well, that is going to be quite an event. I hope that everyone listening can attend. And enthusiasts, can enthusiasts attend CiderCon too, or would you consider it primarily an event for members of the trade?
It is geared toward members of the trade, absolutely. So, this year, we are labeling our sections as either being beginner, intermediate, or advanced. So if you are an enthusiast, you can determine which sections would be helpful for you. And we welcome anyone as long as they're a member. That's the only requirement, that they're a member of the association. And we allow homemakers and enthusiasts to be members. So they're welcome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just again, for folks listening, that there is a website. You'll be able to follow up on the schedule. I'm sure the schedule will be getting more fine-tuned as you get closer. And hopefully the weather will be perfect in Chicago in February.
Yes, let's hope for beautiful blue skies. That would be great. I love blue skies in the winter.
So. Exactly. Exactly. Now, the other big initiative that's happening right now is Pick Cider. And I also want to say that that is the Twitter feed for the United States Association of Cider Makers. It's at Pick Cider. This is an initiative that you're really spearheading to get every table in the U.S. with a bottle of cider or two or three or four for the Thanksgiving meal. Can you talk a little bit about the idea behind this? And more importantly, what can people be doing today to get folks tomorrow or an hour from now grabbing a bottle off the shelf or putting that on their grocery list as they're heading out for Thanksgiving?
I am really excited about the Pick Cider campaign. For having only been launched in August, it's doing tremendously well. It's the brainchild. I want to give a shout out of who came up with the idea. It's the brainchild of Kelly McCoon, who is a cidery in planning in the Columbia River Gorge, just outside of Portland, that volunteered for our marketing committee. And she was thinking about Thanksgiving and how well, you know, the harvest story of cider and the flavor of cider goes with the Thanksgiving table. And so the marketing committee, even before I came on, rallied behind this idea of, okay, we are going to have this campaign and we're going to launch Pick Cider. And so we're in the middle of distributing what I've been calling swag to people who are having Pick Cider events. So if you're a cider maker and you want to participate, you can email pickcider@ciderassociation.org, and we'll get you on our list of events. And what we're really trying to do is have a list of 20 or more national events around cider tastings or cider harvest dinners that we can share with the media as a collective Pick Cider event list. So a lot of these events have already been planned and don't really have anything to do with Pick Cider, but we want to help co-brand them as Pick Cider events so that we can make a bigger splash in the media. So I think that's my biggest call to action for our cider member listeners, is that if you have an event, email us at pickcider@ciderassociation.org so we can make sure to include you and potentially get you swag too. We have buttons and table tents and some blank posters that you can customize for your tasting rooms. And then the second big ask is that we need content. We're putting together a website called pickcider.com that's probably going to be launched in the next week. And in that, on that website, there's one area called stories. And we have some articles where the LA Times, for example, wrote an article about how, you know, move over wine, cider is the Thanksgiving beverage. And so we have that listed there. And then we have a blog where somebody is talking about their cider Thanksgiving tradition. We want to hear from other people about their cider Thanksgiving traditions or their cider Thanksgiving pairing suggestions or recipes, anything and everything. If it's 100 words or more, we'll take it. We want to have a lot of information there for consumers to enjoy. So events, content, and then promotions. I think, you know, in the wine business, they call it O&D sales, October, November, December. So I think probably a lot of cider makers are already thinking about how can I get people to buy more cider in November in preparation for Thanksgiving. But we can help promote those sales and discounts. You know, a good recommendation would be buy one bottle, get a second one at 10% off, and encourage people to put them away for Thanksgiving. So, and I would welcome any other ideas that people have for spreading the word about Pick Cider. We're doing this as a pilot this year. It's been done very quickly, but the enthusiasm from our membership has been incredibly inspiring. The Pick Cider hashtag is doing phenomenal on Instagram and Twitter, and members from all over the country have been emailing us saying, we're running Pick Cider t-shirts, or we're having a Pick Cider event, or we're running a special seasonal cider that's going to taste great at Thanksgiving dinner. And it's just been really fun and a great way for me to get to know the diversity of our membership throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. And on the website, there is a little list of 6 easy ways to participate in the Pick Cider campaign. So you could go to that. That's ciderassociation.org/6 easy ways to participate in the Pick Cider campaign. And some of the things that you have here is to pair your cider with football. And I thought that was kind of interesting that there was a recommended dip or appetizer to pair with your sessionable cider. I'm wondering, with all this said, what, and I'm not going to ask you actually for a brand recommendation. I just kind of was kind of curious, Michelle, for yourself, when you think about a Thanksgiving meal, and if that is a quintessential Thanksgiving meal with a big old turkey and all the stuffing and the nice sweet potatoes and gravy, what kind of cider do you typically go for when you're thinking about having some turkey?
If I was pairing it with turkey, I would probably prefer a cranberry cider, because there's nothing I love more than mashing together all of my Thanksgiving leftovers on a single sandwich. And so that combination of cranberry and turkey together just makes me really happy. So I would, if I was pairing it for the turkey course, I would probably go for cranberry. The other courses would require probably different flavors. I like to get fancy in my selection and my pairings as far as having lots of options on the table. But I am really excited about some of the seasonal cranberry ciders that are coming out.
Nice. Well, I'm going to raise you a glass here. Having just been in Asturias, where we had a 7-course meal paired with ciders, each level of the meal had about 5 different glassware on the table for 5 different kinds of cider. And so I really want to encourage Ciderville to go for it. Think about when you are serving your appetizers to have a specific cider for that. And don't just pick one cider, pick a range of ciders. And then as you come in with your different courses of the meal, grab a couple other bottles that just don't stay in just one type of cider, because everyone's palate's going to be a little bit different. And I would love to see with this Pick Cider campaign that folks are tweeting out photos of not just one bottle on the table, but let's see how many bottles we could get on the table, at least glassware on the table to show that. And don't forget that as the pumpkin pie is coming out and the apples pie is coming out, pecan, whatever you're serving that day, that cider goes really well with that too. And that you could have those aperitifs throughout the beginning into the end. And there's some really nice ice ciders. You could have that Calvados with your coffee that maybe some of those French producers are making. But there's also some really good apple brandies being made in the U.S., which is the same kind of thing that Calvados is, which is a distilled cider. So when I think of pick cider, Michelle, I'm thinking I'm not just going to go for one, but I'm going to be looking for those tweets out there in Ciderville that are hashtagging pick cider and really filling up that table so it feels the abundance that we really experience in this world of cider right now. What do you say?
Yeah, absolutely, Rhea. You know, we are going to be giving away swag to people who have photos online that use the pick cider hashtag that we really like. We're doing a little bit of a photo contest. It's really meant for consumers, but our members are welcome to participate as well. And I think the more varieties they can display, the better, because you're absolutely right. There is a huge diversity. And one of the great things about cider at Thanksgiving is that you can have, you know, several types of cider without getting completely schnockered, because it's lower in alcohol than wine. So that's one of the other things that we really like about having cider for Thanksgiving.
Wonderful. Well, I'm excited for Thanksgiving. I'm excited for you moving into this position and taking the reins and really giving the association the boost forward. I think that having an executive director is very timely, and I think it speaks volumes for the board who has been there to bring a very young association forward so quickly. So we're rooting you on in Ciderville. I know that there's other burgeoning associations popping up both in the U.S., which are more regional, and there's also international associations that are, or I should say, makers coming together that want to create their own association. Before we say goodbye, is there any tips that you might want to share, a one or two tip for a new association moving forward that you've learned in your short amount of travels in your current role?
Well, I don't think it really has to do with my current role, but just sort of my experience with nonprofits in general. And if you are forming, seek somebody to be your umbrella sponsor, potentially somebody else with a 501c6, potentially somebody in your community that can handle a lot of the overhead for you for a small fee. It will just simplify your life so much. And maybe eventually you'll grow out of needing that umbrella sponsor for your nonprofit status. But in the beginning, it will be a godsend. So that's my tip.
Perfect. I would like to thank Michelle McGrath of the United States Association of Cider Makers. Best of luck in your new role as executive director. And all the best to all the members of the association. Here is to 2017. May it be another banner year for cider going up. If you enjoyed this podcast episode with Michelle McGrath and you'd like to hear more, please become a patron of Cider Chat. You could go to Cider Chat's Patreon page and sign up today. Or if you're a commercial cidery, please join the ranks of folks like Tom Oliver at Oliver Cider Perry and Big Apple Hard Cider of New York City and Current Cider of Perkasie, Pennsylvania. All supporters of the Cider Going Up campaign at ciderchat.com. I want to give you some updates of the Cider Days weekend coming right around the corner. That is November 4th, 5th, and 6th. This year, on Friday, November 4th, I will be doing some live recordings. I'll be doing them all weekend, but on the 4th, I'm going to be in Northampton. There's been a little bit of a change in plans. We are not going to have the cider maker that we originally had hoped for. So instead, and really, truthfully, this is my goal for Cider Days, I want to speak to the cider imbibers, the folks who are attending, and get your view on cider and the world scene. What's your thoughts? How are you making cider? What do you enjoy? And what are your expectations? And do you have a story to share about cider days? Well, I would love to hear it. And I'll be recording that all weekend long, but on this Friday from 5 to 6 p.m., I will be at Beerology, where you could stop in and get your supplies before you go and get your sweet cider to ferment. And there, I might record a podcast with you, a little mini chat perhaps, and I will certainly be recording a mini chat with the owner of the store, Mike Schilling, who is a wizard of all things yeast. Oh, that's going to be a lot of fun. Now, one of the things I want to give you some more insider tips for the actual weekend. I know folks want to bring some cider back to their own home port of Ciderville after the event. Now, where do you get that? Well, I've been scooting around a little bit, and I want to give you some more tips than I already have. Some of these places I've mentioned before. If you're heading up north from Hartford, maybe the airport in Bradley Field, you'll be going through Springfield, Massachusetts. And in West Springfield is a store. It's right off the highway called Table and Vine. It's a large liquor store, essentially, that sells beer, cider, and spirits. They have a little bit of Calvados, and they do have some ciders. I wasn't able to get the full list of what they have, but I think they might have a pretty good collection. You could check that out. It won't take too much time. Then you're going to be heading up further north. You're going to go into Northampton. In Northampton, there is a Liquors 44, which is okay. And then there's River Valley Co-op, and they have some nice ciders there. But truthfully, the best selection of ciders that I've seen in the area is at the Spirit House, which is in Amherst. Now, that's going to take you a little bit off the drive there, but they do have some great ciders, including Eric Bordelais' cider. They have some of Tom Oliver's ciders, and they have a lot of U.S. ciders that you might not get from your local regions. So that is Spirit House in Amherst, and it's really not too bad. You'd get off of Interstate 91 and take the exit. You want to Google Spirit House. It's going to be on the show notes links to this episode of 53. And once you get there, well, you'll be in downtown Amherst. And that's a huge college town. You have Amherst College and the University of Massachusetts. And there's different places to grab a bite to eat. And then from there, you could just take, you don't have to go back to the highway. You could take Route 116 or 63 up to Greenfield. And those are nice little back road drives. And before you know it, you'll be back into like the epicenter of the whole Saturday's events, especially for Friday evening. Now, let's go on to Friday evening. What is happening there? Well, there is a seminar that's going to be put on by Darlene Hayes. That's the Cider Cocktails. And there is a fee for that. If you did not get tickets and you're kind of walking around and wondering what to do, well, heck, there's going to be a cider meetup. I'm super stoked about this because I talked to Wendell, who's the owner at The Root Cellar. This is a new, fun, funky little bar owned by a really kind man. And what's going to happen is we're having a cider meetup, and it starts at 6 o'clock. I'll be heading up there from Northampton. I'm sure to arrive probably around 6:30 or so. And you could bring your own cider, whether it's commercial or homemade. There'll be a corking fee, about $5 for a 22-ounce bottle, and then we could pass some cider around and enjoy that. You could also grab some food and bring it over, too. And I've already mentioned where you could get food, but if you need some more tips, well, go to the co-op right across the street and grab some food to go. Or you could go to Mesa Verde right next door. They make some Mexican food. Get some wings at the Wing Shop right on Federal Street. There's a lot of options in town for to-go food to bring to the Root Cellar. And they'll have a container, too, outside where it'll make it a little bit easier for all of us kind of brown bagging it with our cider. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'll then be heading over to Darlene's Talk for a bit and then heading back to the Root Cellar. So that'll be kind of cooking again around 9:30 at night. Now, that's not all Ciderville. It's going to be topped off because the Root Cellar is making cider cocktails. And if you say, I heard this on Cider Chat, well, you get $1 off your cocktail. I thought that was really kind, too. It's a really great support of the event and just getting the word out there. It's a large setting. They're going to have some live music, but it's going to be easy listening. So bring some cider, and we'll all grab a glass and join a chat. I'm really excited to see you there. And I'll be tweeting all weekend long on my feed at Cider Chat. Well, I got to get ready for the weekend. I'm heading out soon to pick up the new baseball caps, the Cider Chat baseball caps that the Nose and I will be asking for donations of at this event we love. Yes, Cider Days indeed. She'll be at the Buckland and Shelburne Falls Community Center all day Saturday. So if you'd like to support this chat, well, you could get your own Cider Chat baseball cap. It's really, really nicely made. I'm super, super excited about that. And equally excited to see you, Ciderville, at this amazing 22nd year of Cider Days. Wow. All right, well, I think it's a wrap. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.